Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and today we're taking a look to begin the show at the Wisconsin State Historical Markers Program. And great to have Fitzy Heimdall with us. Fitzy is the coordinator of the program, and he oversees more than 600 historical markers. And that's a number that grows every year. It's a unique program, and it encourages and guides Wisconsin citizens and groups to establish historical markers in their communities. And we'll talk in detail about this program. And it's kind of a bottom-up approach, which I really like a lot. And I hope you'll join the conversation as we talk with Fitzy. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email to talk@WPR.org. Do you have a favorite historical marker? Or maybe you're thinking there should be one in your community and have some questions about it. I hope you'll join in. Again, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Fitzy, thank you so much for joining in today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, good morning, Larry. It's a pleasure to be on the program.
Well, the Wisconsin State Historical Markers are, I guess, recognizable throughout the state as they're permanent plaques with a state seal, and they stand along roadsides and in town squares. Maybe just talk about the purpose of those markers.
Yeah, absolutely. So Wisconsin's historical markers are an excellent educational tool informing people about significant aspects of our state's past. These permanent outdoor markers are located often near or at the place where something significant occurred. They're located in almost all of Wisconsin's 72 counties. I say almost all, as I hope we might have some listeners in Florence County, as that's the only county that currently doesn't have an official state historical marker. As we begin our conversation, I'll note that I'll be primarily discussing our state's official markers program. There are many different types of markers and markers programs, everything from city markers to county historical society markers to more regional markers or even other agencies that produce their own markers. But we are talking primarily about the Wisconsin official state historical markers, the brown background with cream lettering on them.
They're really, really cool. One of my favorites, or maybe the certainly the one that I've stopped the most at, is the John Muir View marker, which is near Poinette. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I stopped there is because you've got a great view. I mean, you have John Muir's view right there, and it's kind of a breathtaking view, especially at different times of the season. I always try and make a point to stop at different points in the season. But let's go to the history of this thing. How did this get started? It was back in the 50s, wasn't it?
It was. It was So the markers in general, historic markers, date back. The oldest state marker program is Virginia, which is dating back to 1927. Wisconsin's program started back in 1943 when then-Governor Walter Goodland appointed people to be the first historical marker committee. And the reason behind this, or the goal, was to create a system that would unite the histories of our communities through a standard and uniform design. Prior to that, folks were putting up markers, but there was nothing uniform about it. There was no centralized system to review them. And that's where the state really was interested in developing more of a formalized process.
Yeah.
So in 1950, the committee was formed, and in 1953, an official law was passed to establish the markers program.
That's pretty cool, and as it's a bottom up kind of organization. Explain that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, any organization, individual, entity is encouraged to submit a nomination for an official Wisconsin State Historical Marker. As long as it meets the defined criteria, which are, you know, events that have made a significant contribution to our history, individuals who are no longer living, art or architecture, prehistory or archaeology, ethnic groups, eras that represent significant aspects of our physical or natural history, as well as legends and lore. And they are encouraged to apply through the Wisconsin Historical Society. We serve as, you know, basically an administrative review process. And so folks will be doing the research. They will conduct the writing of the text, securing permission primarily to place the marker in a prominent location. As you mentioned, a lot of them are located along our wayside rest pull-offs. So making sure that they're visible and accessible for the general public is important. But what we do from the Historical Society is we review it. We make sure all of the marker application is complete. We fact check it. And then we work with the local applicant as well, you know, to offer suggestions on their text. We have a marker review committee comprised of various staff members. And really, we want to help our local applicants get to the final product of having their state historical marker dedicated and having a uniform style of writing and language.
Yeah, makes sense. Kevin emailed a little contrary view of this. He says the markers are often not supported by the state, but rather private organizations that have an agenda. And so Kevin says they never stop to look at those markers. Now, sounds to me like their markers are supported by the state, but go ahead and react to Kevin's comment.
Sure. And so he raises up an interesting point where, as being driven primarily at the local level, it is the local applicant's responsibility to fund the marker themselves. We work with our local applicants both to make sure that the marker nomination meets the criteria. We also work with our local partners or applicants to work on the text. And so when both sides reach an agreement on the proposed text, that's when the Wisconsin Historical Society places the order on behalf of the marker applicants. You know, we look at making sure that the text is factually accurate. We look to make sure that the marker text is, you know, certainly doesn't have any bias as well, and accurately portrays the history that's being told. And oftentimes what we do is we work with our local applicants to, you know, to explain how the particular topic rises to regional, state, or even national significance, as that's a big point of what the Historical Marker Program tells.
So the first one, what did the first one commemorate?
The first marker was dedicated back in 1951, and it was dedicated to the Peshtigo Fire. It's marked in the cemetery where many victims lost their lives, and actually one of the deadliest fires in our nation's history. Since its first marker in 1951, we have now almost 620 official state historical markers all across the state.
Yeah, I looked at the map, and it looks like I missed the fact that there isn't one in Florence County, but it looked like it pretty much wherever you are in the state, you're going to be able to find one. And that map gives the information on how to find those is in there as well.
Correct. And we make sure to update that map, and there's also a PDF list, and those are updated very frequently when new markers are dedicated. On average, that's anywhere from between 8 to, I'd say, 20 new markers are installed on a given year.
So that's pretty good. How many are in the pipeline right now?
There's actually quite a few. I would say we've about doubled our applications and the nominations we've received. We've received some additional funding, which I'd be happy to talk about as well. But I would say we've got about 20 marker nominations in the pipeline in various stages of review and approval.
So as long as you mentioned funding, let's talk about funding, because the a lot of it comes from the local area, if I'm not mistaken.
That's true, and that is something that we've recognized as a potential barrier. Being primarily driven at a local level and having the funding come from the local level, you know, these markers can cost anywhere from a few hundred dollars all the way upwards to almost $8,000. And so depending on the size of the marker and the amount of character counts that the markers have, you know, that's a determining factor on who gets to have a marker in the first place. You know, it takes a lot of work and effort to not only raise the funds to erect a historical marker, but to do the research and the writing as well, and to secure the necessary permissions for that marker.
And they have
take anywhere from up to a year.
Up to a year. And they have a definite look and a definite style that is pretty much for every one of those markers, correct?
That's correct. And that is certainly a purposeful decision to have that uniform, you know, the brown and cream marker with the badger emblem at the very top. That's what distinguishes our official state historic marker from others.
And the funding, you mentioned there was some additional funding coming through?
That's correct. We've been fortunate enough to work with the William J. Pomeroy Foundation, a national organization based out of New York that has a real interest in funding historical markers. One of the gaps that we found through an intensive survey of all of our existing markers was, you know, what were the stories that were being told? What were the stories that weren't being told? And how were the stories being told in the first place? You know, who was the one who was writing the text, or who was the one who was telling the stories, and from whose perspective? And as part of that study, we found that there is a large underrepresentation in African American stories being told, women's history being told, no markers being told of recent immigrant history, Latinx, Hmong, refugees. There were previously no LGBTQ plus markers. Fortunately, because of this funding, those have changed, and we've been fortunate enough to be able to provide some support to organizations to fund and write those types of markers as well. And so I think we're seeing some positive change in having more of a full representation in the stories and the histories that are being told through the markers program.
Yeah. Fitzy Heimdall, our guest today, he is the Wisconsin State Historical Markers Program Coordinator, works out of the Wisconsin Historical Society. Questions for him, I hope you'll join in, or maybe you've got something to share regarding a specific one of the markers that you that exist perhaps in your area, or maybe you have a question about one that you'd like to have. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Coming up at noon today, we'll talk about the Upper Mississippi River with Reggie McLeod, editor and publisher of Big River Magazines. That's at 12 o'clock today. Right now, though, we're taking a look at the Wisconsin State Historical Markers Program with our guest, Fitzy Heimdall, who is coordinator of the program at the Wisconsin Historical Society. Questions or comments, or maybe an experience with one of those markers, I hope you'll join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address is talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. We'd certainly love to hear from you as we move along throughout the program. So grant money is $75,000. Did you say that was in grant money to diversify the stories?
That's correct. Yep. And our goal is to provide the funds for up to 25 new state historical markers to better reflect the rich and diverse history of our state.
That's pretty cool. I know this year some of the grant money is being spent putting up 9 new historical markers in Milwaukee that highlights the city's place in the civil rights movement.
Yeah, absolutely. It's as many folks may know that throughout the 60s, Milwaukee was the site of a massive influential civil rights movement that combated racial discrimination and segregation in housing, employment, and education. Part of the broader national movement for civil rights. From August 1967 to March of 1968, the Youth Council and its protective unit, the Commandos, led 200 consecutive nights of protests for fair housing. As a result of that, in 1968, the U.S. government passed the National Fair Housing Act prohibiting discrimination based on race. On April 30th, the Milwaukee passed its own fair housing bill 6 years after Alderwoman Belle Phillips first introduced it to the council. And we're working with a group called March on Milwaukee, a grassroots organization of former NAACP Youth Council members and commandos, community organizers, historians, and more. And what's really unique is that the marchers themselves, you know, they have direct input in what's being said in the text. They're a central part in the development of the writing of the text based on their lived experiences.
And where will the, and obviously the markers are going to be placed around Milwaukee, but where specifically will some of them be placed?
Sure. So there are two of them currently. One of them is located outside North Division High School. They're marking the specific sites that were very significant during those 200 nights of protests. And so there's going to be one, for example, at the 16th Street Viaduct. There'll be one in a couple of Milwaukee's county parks dedicated to the Freedom Houses, where a lot of the organizing happened during those marches. We're hoping to dedicate one near the former Eagles Club, which was also a pivotal site during that era. So we're really looking to place them in close proximity to where the events occurred during that time.
Very cool. Ned in Florence, Wisconsin, Florence County. Ned?
This is Ned in Florence. I happen to be a member of the Florence County Historical Society.
All right. Well, we've learned earlier that Florence County doesn't have one of the Wisconsin Historical Society or Wisconsin State Historical Markers.
Yeah, I just learned that's one of the many things I've learned on your program, Larry.
Well, what do you think? Are there some possibilities?
Yeah, we do have a nice marker where the home where the Charles Woolsey grew up, who was a hero of World War One, led the Lost Battalion, which I guess was pretty famous back in that day. And we have plaques in some of the buildings, but I guess we don't have an official one.
Well, all right. Well, let's talk to Fitzy here for a minute. Fitzy, how does Ned and his Florence County Historical Society group go forward on this if they want to apply?
Yeah, that's a great question, I'm so glad to have you on the line. Well, the first step is to fill out a pre-application form on our main program website, which will be listed on the page here. Mm-hmm. But it's a simple pre-application form that basically determines the eligibility for the program. You know, the last thing we want to do is have folks go through the entire application process just to find out that perhaps their nomination doesn't quite meet the qualifications for the State Historical Markers Program. So that's the first step. And then once given the go-ahead to submit the final application and a $250 application fee, you will work with us directly on making sure that all the information is there. And you know, we're happy to help you throughout that entire process as well. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. So, Ned, if you type in Wisconsin State Historical Markers Program, it's going to pop up. And we'll have a link on our page today at the Larry Mueller, WPR.org/Larry. If you go to today's date, we'll have in the comments section, there'll be a link. But I think you could just type in Wisconsin Historical Society Markers Program, it'll pop up. Ned, does that help?
Yeah, I think it might get us started. We'll see what happens here. And thanks for your program.
All right, appreciate it very much. Well, maybe we can finally get Florence County to join the rest of our counties.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it. Well, Greg in Minocqua. Oh, we lost Greg in Minocqua. The Marinette County Historical Marker is—he's happy and sad. I don't know what he means by that. How are the? It may have something to do with how the markers are kept up.
Mm-hmm. So that's another great question too. And one thing that's maybe a little unique about Wisconsin's State Historical Marker Program is that when a local applicant applies for a state historical marker, they technically become the owner of the state historical marker too. And, you know, while the markers are designed to last in perpetuity, some of those earlier markers, you know, from the 50s and 60s do start to show their wear over time. And, you know, we work with local applicants, if they're still around, or local communities to get the resources needed to have these markers refurbished. You know, refurbishment options are certainly there. Sometimes, you know, if a marker's old enough and some of these older markers have marker text that's problematic or perhaps is found to be factually inaccurate, we would then work with them to potentially create a new state historical marker as well.
So there's options and possibilities there for that. You can join in too. Maybe you have a comment about a historical marker in your area, or maybe just a question about the whole process. Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. You mentioned revising. Have there been situations where you've done some revising?
You know, there are. Americans' understanding of the past regularly evolves, and so do historians' role to interpret that history. The problem, of course, with historical markers is that they don't change, and so sometimes we have text or interpretation that, by today's standards, would be considered inaccurate or even offensive. And the State Historical Society does have the regulatory authority to request a removal of a marker if so determined. And what we do is we would work with the original owner or applicant, if they're still around, as well as local community partners, and in particular, the groups that are directly impacted by the story being told. Close collaboration on whether there's interest in a new marker, as well as consultation and having that marker removed.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think there was one on a marker on Madeline Island that was replaced, if I'm not mistaken.
That's true. And that was done actually last fall in September of 2023. And that's one where the marker was actually owned by the Wisconsin Historical Society. And so we were able to replace that marker. It's retitled Munawanakaning, which is the Anishinaabe name for Madeline Island, meaning home of the yellow-breasted flickerbird. The original marker was erected in 1961, and that one inaccurately stated that the island was discovered by the French. The new marker was developed using input from the Bad River and Red Cliff Ojibwe communities, and today it recognizes the central role of Indigenous peoples in the island's history.
It makes makes a lot of sense to me. Someone else is wondering, how's the location of a historical marker determined?
That's a great question. And what we look for in terms of a location is, most commonly, its accessibility. Is the proposed location for a marker accessible to folks who would either be walking or, more commonly, driving? We have quite a following of our state historical markers, and we actually have a few folks who make it a goal of theirs to travel and visit every single marker that there is across the state. And so, you know, they need a place to park. They need a place where it's visible, visible at all times. So, you know, if it's located inside a building or a gated area that might be closed at certain times, we would encourage them to look for potentially a different location as well.
And the descriptions, talk about the descriptions that, I mean, somebody is looking to hit all 620 of them that currently exist. You need some good directions, and you provide that.
We do. We've got, you know, as I said before, there's that online interactive map. We also have a PDF list of all of our state historical markers, both of which are regularly updated. And there's instructions and directions on those on where they're located. There's another great website that's not affiliated with the Wisconsin Historical Society, but it's a group of volunteers who went out and created a website called the Historical Marker Database. That has information on, you know, pretty much any and all historical marker that there might be across the country. You know, whether it's a state marker, a local marker, they're pretty robust in having as many markers listed there as possible. And I think at the last count, there were about 180,000 markers across the country that were listed on that site. So it's truly remarkable how many markers there are in our landscape.
Oh, man. Let's talk about some. I'm surprised we're not getting more calls on this, because it surprises me that more people don't want to talk about their own marker. If you've got a marker that you want to promote, give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or maybe just send an email. You can email us to talk@wpr.org. There's a state historical marker commemorating the Green Bay Packers that went missing. Talk about that.
Yeah, so that's an interesting one, and that does occasionally happen. We sometimes do get reports of markers that go missing. You know, most often those reports come in from members of the public who, you know, they were trying to go see a marker and it wasn't at its listed location. And when I get those calls or emails, I need to do a little bit of investigative research and, you know, see who the applicant was, where the marker was located, and then from there try to determine what might have happened to the markers. A lot of times it might be related to construction projects. Marker might have been taken down and have plans to put back up when construction is finished. But this particular marker dedicated to the Green Bay Packers was one that was on our list for quite a few years, certainly before my time and before a couple of our other folks' time. And there was a recent article where, out of the blue, this marker, it showed up again. Apparently, it had been removed, and according to the individual, was found near a dumpster, and it eventually made its way all the way to Ohio.
A guy by the name of Weasel.
Yeah.
You found the marker damaged in a dumpster, And he said he was played in a band or something, I guess. And the band, they saw it, and then they went and played in their band, and then they came by again, and it was still in the dumpster. And so he said they had to get it out. He said it was heavy. It weighed like 300 pounds. Mm-hmm. But it was damaged, and they pulled it. He said, you know, I figured if you had said a dumpster, it must be okay for me to take. So
it's a wild story.
It's a wild story. So sometime after 2003, he took it home to Ohio, and there it sat. Now, I don't know. I don't think it's made its way back, has it?
Not to my knowledge. And, again, since the program is so locally driven, if there was the desire to have a new marker replaced, we'd certainly be happy to work with the Packers or the foundation to have that installed.
it was a great story. Weasel. Lynn in Spring Green, let's go to you now. Thanks for calling, Lynn. What's on your mind?
Good morning. This is lovely timing. And thanks for taking my call. I have kind of an old curiosity, but a recent, really, I'm actively curious about the old military road that, and there's apparently more than one, that ran through Wisconsin. And there are segments, I found a few segments in different places up by, was it by Three Rivers and outside Fond du Lac and in Fond du Lac and outside Madison and so on and so forth. And I've just started researching this, and I think I'm going to actually pursue looking at this more. When I went to look, oh gosh, a couple years ago, no, maybe last year, I did a writing road trip, and I did the back roads, and it was wonderful to run into some of the historical markers. For example, the one to Chief Waupaca, outside Waupaca, and I would run into them quite by accident, but taking the blue highways and the back roads, and this is the first I knew that there was a website. So I'm going to be looking for that. A real specific question, though, do you know if there is any kind of historical marking about the old military roads?
That's a great question, and there are. I can think of a few in particular. There's one in Iowa County that was erected back in 1961. With the title of the old military road, the Fort Crawford to Prairie du Chien and Fort Howard road, the portage. There's actually one in Langlade County as well. I know there's one in Dane County, and we're actually working with an applicant to erect another one potentially in the Madison area, close to where the military road went as well. This one will have more of a focus on the Native American history of travel, but certainly those old roads, their history goes back thousands of years before that as well, following established trails.
Yeah. Lynn, sounds like you've got some opportunity there. Now, how would Lynn find those out? Would she just what would she do to find out where those are all located?
Yeah, so a great way to do it, again, looking at the map. But if you reach out to me directly, I can send you a Excel spreadsheet or send you the number of markers that there are specifically. Being over 600 and almost 20 markers, if there's a specific marker or a theme of markers that folks are interested in, I can certainly do some research and create an itinerary for them.
And how does Lynn find your email address?
Yeah, my email address is on the Wisconsin Historical Society webpage. That's the best way to reach me, via email or phone. But happy to assist folks in discovery of markers and through the application process of new markers as well.
And Lynn, it's Fitzy Heimdall who you're talking with here. And Fitzy is the program coordinator for the Historical Society. Does that all help?
That's absolutely wonderful. I literally just came back from Horicon and the Fond du Lac area, kind of working on this project yesterday. So this is great. And I will look you up. Do I say Fitzy? Is that right?
Yep, correct.
All right, I will find you. I appreciate this. This is a great program. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. You know, I looked up the origins of Fitzy, and it's an old German origin that means peaceful ruler. In old German. So you're kind of the peaceful ruler of this program. So that's pretty cool. Lynn, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Clayton in Roscoe, Illinois next. Hi, Clayton.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to state, growing up, those historical markers, they played a big role in our family life. I grew up in northeast Iowa, and we travel all across southern Wisconsin. There was the Battle of Bad Axe there by Prairie du Chien, and all the way across to Illinois, we'd stop during family vacations at almost everyone along the line, the Lead region, and a whole bunch of them. And they played a big role growing up in our lives, so I just wanted to state that.
Oh, Clayton, thanks a lot for calling. Do you get that kind of response, Fitzy?
I do. I often get folks who, you know, either their parents or now they are parents, and they'll go and stop at any and all historical markers that they find along their route. And, you know, it's a great way to learn about our local history. And even in my role, it's always fun to learn these stories and these histories that are important to our local communities. I certainly learn a lot, too, by what is submitted and nominated for state historical markers.
Yeah, absolutely. Renata in Lake Mills, we'll go to you. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm calling to say my favorite marker, which is the 45th parallel in Door County that sits between Jackson Port and Bailey's Harbor. And that's my favorite. But I do have a question for you about markers. Are there any markers that describe our state's rich history in the canning factory industry, having some of the largest ones in the world at some points in history, but also the migrant communities that worked at them? And I wondered if there's any recognition of that. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling, Renata.
Yeah, that is a great question. And, you know, I don't think there are specifically to that topic. There's many that are dedicated to, you know, Wisconsin's rich industrial and commercial history. But specific to canning and the folks that worked in that industry, I don't think that there are.
I was trying to think. I thought I saw one near Sun Prairie that had to do with peas, but that might have been just another marker, but not a Wisconsin Historical Society one.
Right. And that certainly could be the case.
All right. Well, that's something else for people to look at and think about in their particular areas, because if you've got some background, or at least know a little bit about the migrant history that for the area, or maybe the canning industry in that area. There's certainly canning as vegetables has been a really large part of our history. You can join in too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you can email us, the email address, talk@wpr.org. Larry Mueller here talking with Fitzy Heimdall, Wisconsin State Historical Markers Program Coordinator for the Wisconsin Historical Society for WPR News. Thanks for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Just a look ahead to tomorrow on the show. We talk with Craig Handel about helping groundskeeper George Toma write his biography. It's titled The Sod Father, An Extraordinary Journey in the Shadows of Sport's Greatest Fields. Then we talked to John Greenberg, president of the Milwaukee Admirals hockey team. That's tomorrow. Right now, we're taking a look at the Wisconsin State Historical Markers Program with the coordinator of it, Fitzy Heimdall. And Stephen Washburn has something for us. Let's go there. Steve, thank you for calling.
Good morning. And I want to say I appreciate the markers. My family and I always stop and look. But I do have the concern that especially some of the dated ones are coming from a white man's perspective. And just, for example, the guest just mentioned a marker about a battle. It was possibly closer to a massacre that took place in a battle, in some people's opinions. So I'm wondering what steps the guest takes to keep the markers current and culturally appropriate.
Good question, Steve. Thank you very much for calling.
Indeed, and that is certainly an accurate statement. You know, in particular, I'll say related to our Native American history. Here in Wisconsin, we have about 120 markers that mention Native American history or Indigenous history. But the problem we face with a lot of them is perhaps that history wasn't written by an Indigenous perspective or from tribal historians. And some of those older markers, as the listener mentioned, they reflect that style of writing, and they reflect who wrote the text. Those are some of the markers, our more recent markers, we've been able to work with our tribal historic preservation officers and our Native Nations to give them the resources to work with us and to have markers that are dedicated and centered on the Indigenous perspective and their cultures and stories. And so, you know, there's certainly a lot of them, and I'm hopeful in the direction that we're taking, though, to really give voices to those whose stories are being told through the Markers program.
Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, there have been some changes made, and there's some money available for correcting or reworking many of those signs, and hopefully they can all be reflective of true history. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Steve, thank you very much. A good comment and question. Margaret in Mosinee, you've got a favorite marker.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call, Larry. My favorite marker is in a county park on Lake Dubé, and it's titled John Baptiste Dubé. And it gives some history on John Baptiste Dubé, and it mentions a Native American Indian chief, and he and Baptiste Dubé married the daughter of that Indian chief. And it said that this was a crossing point near here. I don't remember all the other details of that marker, but it's very, very interesting.
Fitzy, a comment?
Thank you for that. Yes, I mean, specifically to that marker, one of the key questions is whether it's an official state historical marker or another marker in general. I don't know that specific one off the top of my head. But, you know, your questions about favorite markers inspired me to pick two of them, and they're both food-related. One of them is a marker that's dedicated to Colby Cheese in Colby, Wisconsin, home of Colby Cheese. And the other is dedicated to the milkshake in Two Rivers, Wisconsin, the birthplace of the milkshake.
Oh, a couple of other ones. Margaret, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Donna in Eau Claire, we'll go to you.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering if Francis Willard, who was involved with the prohibition of alcohol, and also suffragette, if there was a marker for her anywhere
in the
Janesville area.
In the Janesville area. And the name of the woman again?
Frances Willard, W-I-L-L-A-R-D.
Okay, Frances Willard. Well, I tell you what, Fitzy's looking it up right now to see if we have a marker.
Unfortunately, there's not, but there probably should be. And that is also one of the, one of the underrepresented histories that we find in the markers program is, unfortunately, there's very few women that these markers are dedicated to. And, you know, we certainly would love to see that change.
So, Donna, I know you formerly lived in Janesville, but if you've got some friends there, you might send them a note to listen to this show or to take a look at the State Historical Markers Program. It's on the Wisconsin Historical Society website, I believe. And they may want to put in a proposal for it. So if you've got some contacts there, or I guess you could probably do it yourself, but it'd probably better if to have the local folks leading that. Thank you. Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Your turn. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I just wanted to inquire. I grew up in Crestwood on the west side of Madison. The formal name is the Wisconsin Cooperative Housing Association, and it was spearheaded by John Bordner, who was he was very prominent in land planning around the country. It is a co-op, and each lot, what happened was a group of people got together, they bought a farm, they divided it into cul-de-sacs. So every street in the community is a cul-de-sac, and each lot is relatively small in order to keep the price
down.
Affordable at that time, which was like the mid to late 30s. And each lot is adjacent to a park area, which is shared space for everybody to enjoy. And there are, I don't remember how many acres, but there's quite a few acres of shared space in the community.
Hmm.
And it each lot carries one, has one share in the co-op attached to it. So when you buy, they're all built up now. So when you buy your house, you acquire a share in the co-op, and there's an annual meeting and.
Yeah.
Community parties and gatherings, and it's a really a very special community.
Fitzy?
Yeah, that's, you know, I don't see any state historical marker dedicated to that particular community, but I certainly think it would qualify for the markers program. Many times we see nominations for historical markers that are dedicated to the overall history of a community. And so certainly that is a possible topic and a eligible nominee.
And I'm thinking back to my days of taking a class in cooperatives here at the UW, and the cooperative movement got started here in Wisconsin and then spread nationally, but it started here in our state. And here we are out of time. Fitzy, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today, and I invite anybody to take a look at that program, State Historical Markers Program, and maybe you've got something that you want to have included. Worth a try. Fitzy, thanks again. Oh, and there is a Francis Willard marker in River Forest, Illinois. So there's one in River Forest, Illinois. Fitzy Heimdall is the Wisconsin State Historical Markers Program Coordinator. Great to have him with us. Of course, he works out of the Wisconsin Historical Society. Coming up, a look at Big River Magazine and Life Along the Mississippi. I'm Larry Mealer.